I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Well, hi, folks. Jeremy here from the Sick Boy Podcast. And I have a quick announcement that I want to throw at the top of this episode. Some of you may or may not know that I have another podcast titled Turn Me On Podcast that I host with my wife. And we talk about things like sex and relationships and kinks and a whole bunch of naughty stuff. And we're doing a live show here in our hometown of Halifax, Nova Scotia. It's actually happening this weekend. That is February 9th. And it's taking place at the Mayflower Curling Club. An amazing little venue if you've never been. And there's just a few tickets left. So I wanted to put this out there. If anybody is in Halifax and you want to come see Turn Me On Podcast live, you can get your tickets. Head on over to turnmeonpodcast.com/shows. Or you can go through tickethalifax.com to find the tickets. They're $16 plus taxes and fees. And here's the big thing is that show is we're in partnership with the Halifax Sexual Health Center, and $1 of each ticket is actually going to go to HSHC to raise some money for some shit that matters. So if you want to come out, have some good, delicious, good robot beer and see a wonderful show, our guest is going to be the ever so famous Rouge Fatale from here in Halifax. And we're really looking forward to it. So go get your tickets. TurnMeOnPodcast.com/shows. Okay, let's start this week's episode. I am beyond elated to bring this to the airwaves. This is an episode that I've been hoping would happen for a good chunk of time. Today's guest is one of my heroes, one of the most important people in my entire life, Erin Morris, my drama teacher. She's played a massive role in shaping who I am as a human, and I love her to death. And this is one of those extraordinarily silly and fun conversations. Erin, I love you, and thank you so much for coming on the mics. And I know that everyone tuning in this week is going to see why you're so important to me. So hope you enjoy it, and we love all you. See you on the other side. Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Mo. She has rheumatoid arthritis. Let's talk about it. You literally just counted and this exploded.
On its own?
Yes.
What?
Are you for real?
I am not fucking joking.
I counted down and then
you went 3-2 and then this thing fucking blew up. I swear to God, I just went like this.
Put your hand on it.
Put my hand on it. It blew up.
That was crazy. That's why you're supposed to hold your thumb over the top. Actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are you recording right now?
Yeah, we are now.
Well, let me just say then.
That scared the shit out of me too.
So this is. I mean, who knows? The episode might end up being shit. But this is, but this is a really, like, special episode for me in particular because we get to sit down with one of my favorite human beings on the planet, a person who has effectively changed the course of my life.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, you did. My mom. No, just kidding. Erin Morris, who you were and always will be my drama teacher. But you showed up with a bottle of Prosecco to congratulate us on, you know, we're doing pretty good. I think Sick Boys, you know, you've done well.
We're leading people to believe that anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We're tricking them enough. And I put the bottle on the table and Brian was counting down to hit record. And he went 3-2. And then as soon as he said one, the fucking cork exploded.
It was like he did it with his mind.
Yeah.
Because for those of you guys who That's don't know, wild. Usually right before we record, I always count down 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're live.
And then
I almost always do that.
Have you guys ever done the thing with the knife or with like a sword or some shit? What's it called?
Yeah.
Sabering.
Sabering.
I was going to say lancing, but sabering is better. Yeah.
Is it lancing or sabering?
No, it is sabering.
It is sabering. Someone described that to me the other night, like on New Year's, and I had never heard of it before. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. That you just follow the line of the bottle.
Yeah, and you trace right up and it pops the whole thing
that's
right
crazy.
Off.
It just like slices right through the glass. Crazy.
Anyway, thanks for the Prosecco, Mo.
My
pleasure. Would you like some?
Yeah, I'm going to take the first swig.
So I'm wildly excited that this is happening. I've been wanting this to happen for quite a long time, and I knew it would eventually come. But before we start, we're obviously going to be talking about sickness because you've got some shit going on. But before we get into that,
wait, you said you weren't sick.
Damn it, Taylor drank from the bottle.
Fuck,
I'm not contagious sick.
Before we get into what you're dealing with, I want to tell a story. And I want to see what you remember from this, because I've told this story to these guys a number of times. It's like
it's probably his favorite story to tell.
It's a go-to bar story, and I don't think I've ever said it on the show.
And you told it just recently. We were up for your birthday.
That's right.
And it came up, and I said, oh, fuck, the amount of times I've heard this story. Because someone, it was on the topic of what's the funniest thing that's ever happened to you ever. And I was like,
the funniest moment of your life.
I know exactly what story this is for Jeremy. I've heard it 1,000 times. So I'll just sit back while he tells the story.
So I'll try to tell like a sort of condensed version of it so that we don't take up too much time.
I'm almost certain you've told it on the show before.
I'm almost certain you won't tell a condensed version too.
Yeah. That's
so
for
you
sure.
were there.
Okay.
It was, I was probably in grade 12. The improv team. And you took us out. You were our improv team coach. You took us out to see some community theater at the Dartmouth Players Community Theater House.
Yeah.
And the show was essentially – so let me just lay this out. Dartmouth Players Theater, very small, like little sort of black box theater set up.
Totally, yeah.
In the audience is 3 people. 2 of them sitting together, 1 person solo, and then the entire improv team who decided to sit all the way at the very back.
Which is how many?
Which is like, what, there's probably like
probably
13
12,
of us?
12 13 of us? Plus me, yeah, probably.
So the other people are sitting like right at the front. Actors come out, they do this show. The whole idea of the show was it was like some sort of spooky mystery where it was a couple, a man and a woman. And the woman, early on in the show, sees out of her window a murder happen in the apartment adjacent to theirs in the window. And she's freaking out. But everyone's like, no, 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 no. You're a crazy woman. That didn't happen. And her husband's like, no, sweetie, like that's not the case. And she sees another murder like the next day, something like that.
And very rear window sounding.
Yeah, it was totally a ripoff of like, you know, Friday night or whatever, the Freaky Friday or... No, that was the
body switch.
That was
the body.
Yeah, it's a different movie. So then there's a scene, and we're basically coming up to it's like the climax of the first half of the show. We're coming up to the intermission, and she sees this murder happen again. This is like the second or third time she sees the murder, and the scene, the way it's supposed to go, is she witnesses the murder, screams. Puts her hand up on her forehead and does that like classic, and faints. And as she faints, her husband rushes in, catches her mid-faint, right? This is what's supposed to happen. Picks her up, walks her over to the couch, gently lays her down. I'm assuming this is what was supposed to happen. Gently lays her on the couch, strokes her hair, kisses her forehead.
Then what?
And shakes his head, sad, and then walks off stage and the curtains close. What really happened was... She sees the murder, puts her hand on her forehead. She faints. As she goes down, husband rushes in, swoops in, picks her up, stands up, starts to walk her over to the couch, but fucking trips. And instead of going down and taking her with him, he's like, nah, she's getting to that couch. That couch is a good 5 feet away. He throws her body through the air. She smashes the side of the couch, hits the ground. He collapses and, like, wrenches his knee.
Wrenches his knee. So dramatic.
We, as a group, except for Yumo, are laughing so hard at this moment. But then our laughter starts to calm down. And also, everyone hears this laughter. I mean, it's a small room. We are dying laughing. The guy, the woman, she's like, she like gets up and slinks onto the couch and like lays on it. And the guy's like, and he's grabbing his knee. And he gets up and he goes, and he starts to drag himself over to her. Jeez. And he like kneels down and kisses her forehead. He's like, ow, and like walks off the stage. Now at this point, we are shit pissing, howling, and the laughter is like contagious. And the three people that aren't with us, they are not laughing, and that's making us laugh even more. And
absolutely.
You, Mo, you are like, shut the fuck up. You're irate. Because I think like there was something to do with like whoever was running the Dartmouth Players Club, like they also were like, I don't know, like
in
the main
show,
adjudicator
maybe?
Of like the improv games or something. You were like, we're fucked this season.
True.
I've never in my life laughed so hard than when watching that guy commit to getting to that couch and kissing that poor woman who he clearly concussed. Like she was done for that the rest of that run.
I remember that evening, and I remember taking you all, but I do not remember that. I probably blocked it out.
Yeah.
Something to forget.
Those ungrateful little fucks. I probably blocked it out.
Yeah, you were definitely pissed. You were really pissed.
Oh, that's really funny because—
Which made it that much more funnier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys used to love it. The madder I got, the more hilarious it was for all of you. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was the funniest moment of my entire life.
And that's when I was like still pretty much like a baby teacher. I was just brand new little baby teacher then.
Yeah, look at you now. You actually run, you own 12 schools.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You rolled up in here in a Tesla X.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I'm making education
work
for me.
A bit weird, but that's cool.
and a grill for some reason. Those were cool like 10 years ago. But you've got gold in your teeth. It's weird.
I'm trying to bring that back. I'm trying to like recycle that.
Yeah.
I have a really good Jer story if there's a time to share.
Yeah, let's do it right now.
So I was Jeremy's grade 10, 11, 12 drama teacher. I also coached him for 3 years on the improv team. And I directed him in our school musicals. So we spent a lot of time together.
What musical was it?
We did Fame and we did Grease.
Yeah. Jeremy was Danny in Grease.
Yeah.
And I actually
never told me this.
Oh, yeah. See, we're going to learn a lot of stuff today. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't remember Fame. Who were you in Fame? I mean, I remember the show,
I was like the, hey, what's up, ladies? Like, I'm the sexually aggressive Italian guy.
Yeah. I cannot remember that character's name. But the stage.
Joey? It's probably fucking Joey.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Joey.
It does.
You're basically Joey from Friends.
Yeah. Anyway, one day we were wrapping up improv practice. And for some reason, Jeremy was lagging. Like, he was the last one packing up. This is one of my fave Jeremy stories, actually. And he was the last person to leave. And so he walked out my classroom door and he goes, bye, Mo. See ya. Love ya. And then he walked down the hall. And that was just weird. Like, you don't tell your teachers you love them a lot.
Yeah.
You know. But it was just really, really funny. And so there was this weird moment where I took a breath and I was like, thought to myself, that's weird.
And the principal walked right in and went, did he just say what I thought he said? And then that's when you got fired.
That is inappropriate.
And so you opened your own 12 schools.
Actually, what happened was he went down the hall and then I think you must have had your own moment where you were like, what the fuck? That was really weird. And then you came back and you're like, you know, like, love you, like, you know how, you know, like you love, like, you know, and you're my teacher and I love, like, you know, and I was like, I get it, Jer. It's okay.
Yeah.
And then you were so embarrassed. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
That's
how I feel every day when I tell.
Every time you use the word love,
whenever I go to Starbucks, they're like, thank you, I love you. And I walk out and I come back. But like, I love, you know, I love the, I love, you know, a white chocolate mocha. Oh, fuck.
I love the coffee. You make the coffee. I just love that, you know, it's a thing. I love you and I love the coffee. I love you all the coffee. Yeah.
Well, I do love you, Mo.
Aw, dude, same.
And this is gonna be great because also another reason why I'm excited about this episode is because it is the second time that we'll be covering arthritis. And we haven't fucking touched on arthritis in a long ass time. And I mean, everyone's experience with everything is different, but I feel like what you've experienced is going to be vastly different from when we spoke with Meg, which was like ages ago.
Meg was a juvenile, wasn't it? Juvenile arthritis of sorts?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I listened. That was a good episode.
So what do you got? The rheumatoid arthritis?
Yeah, you got it.
You got the rheums.
Yeah.
It just sounds like a lot of calluses. You know what I mean?
It sounds like something that happens to old people.
Well, definitely.
I was going to say,
you are an old person, so it doesn't make sense.
Arthritis across the board sounds old.
Right?
Yeah. Well, but you know what? The benefit of the doubt to Meg, she had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis.
Right, so like,
At least in the title, it's like, hey, by the way, asterisk. Yeah. It's going to say arthritis, but it's like,
that just sounds like
one.
Somebody in like their early 50s got arthritis.
Yeah, right.
You know?
So, Aaron, you're what, 85 now?
I mean, I look 40.
right.
But actually 85, no, 40.
Okay, yeah, so 40 years old.
Yep.
And you, when did this all start? Because you didn't have arthritis when I was saying I love you.
No, you loved me long before arthritis took hold.
I love you long time.
I would say I'm 2 years into my diagnosis. And probably 2 to 3 years before that. So it took a long time to get the diagnosis. And in fact, my diagnosis was pretty quick compared to some people. I think the average is 4 years. It takes between sort of onset and getting a diagnosis of what's going on with you. I'd say about 5 years managing, dealing, asking questions.
So you're 40 now. This is a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
When you're like... I'm about to turn 30 this year, and for me, I'm starting to thoughts are creeping into my head where it's like, oh, like maybe this is happening to my body because I'm getting older.
Yeah.
Like the dribble thing that you were talking about?
Sometimes I don't know how to avoid the jokes that you guys,
you set them up so perfectly.
The problem is that if you fight it, and then you're like, that, I didn't say anything about that, then everybody just thinks that you're lying.
Dude, it's like improv. You just have to go with it.
Yes, right. And.
What's the golden rule?
And. Yes, and.
Yeah.
So, okay, so.
And you're feeding him. That's what we call it, feeding and endowing.
I do like, that's why you guys keep me around.
Yeah, that's right. But what are you talking about, though? What are you talking about in your body?
Personally?
Yeah.
Just like aches and pains, muscle soreness. And I mean, you guys know, I've been going to the gym a lot. So
yes, we do know that.
He said
with a wry smile.
So obviously I've been having more muscle soreness as of late, but you wonder on recovery times and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Humble brag.
How many reps, how many wads and how many AMRAPs you should be doing?
I'm starting to get a little bit sore because you're working out a lot.
What sort of cycle you should be on? Yeah.
All right, get to the fucking point.
The point was at 38 years old, what was it that made you kind of go, oh, well, this doesn't seem normal? Was it that extreme?
You know what? Initially, it's funny you bring that up because initially that was totally my thought. I was probably about 35 or 36 when little things started to crop up. And
in hindsight, you look back and you go, that was that, but I didn't know that.
Right, exactly. And at the time, I just thought, this is what it's like to, be approaching 40. I really did. So valid point you're making. And I think that's why initially I just kept putting things off. It started one summer. I'd wake up in the morning and my feet would feel sore, right? After I'd just been sleeping all night and achy, right? And I thought, okay, well, this is, maybe I was on my feet too much yesterday, or maybe I did too much of this or that, or worked out too hard, or was that, whatever the case may be.
And you're not doing CrossFit or anything like that?
Definitely not CrossFit. No, that's not my jam. But I'm pretty a physically active person. I have a very physically demanding job and it's busy and it's active and, have young children, My oldest is 10. My youngest is 6. So at that time I had a toddler. So I just thought a lot of the, you know, this is what it's like to be getting older and have kids. Ooh. And you're just, I'm tired. And I am a teacher. And that's a physically demanding and emotionally demanding job. And I just thought it was all of that initially. And then things got weird. Things started to get really weird.
What got weird?
That same summer, my hands would kind of go numb. And if I was driving or if I like held them up for too long or I was doing something like painting or whatever. So that was the start. These funny little weird things that, you know, this all happens to all of us. Something happens in your body and you sort of wait it out and see if it stops. And then you're like, oh, okay, no worries.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Everything.
I'm actually going through that literally right now. I got really...
With the dribble thing?
I got really sick.
Just see how long it dribbles for, and then if it dribbles for too long...
You're peeing.
You're just full on being then.
If it dribbles for too long, you better be at a urinal.
I had a really bad flu last weekend.
Oh, yeah, it was real bad.
The fuck, bro? I said, was anybody sick before we started drinking from the Prosecco?
He's good now.
I also didn't drink any of the Prosecco. But,
right, because you're kale.
But my thumb has been numb since, and like I felt like that's just like weird nerve pain from being sick, and like you just wait long enough and it gets better.
Which is that also, like, can we just talk about that explanation you just gave? Oh, it's just weird nerve pain because I had the flu. Where's the connection right. there?
These are just,
you know what I mean?
Well,
that's very conspiracy.
Brian's inner doctor.
I don't want to go too deep into it, but I just assumed that it was something from like being overly like dehydrated from.
What were
really
you doing
sick.
With your thumb while you had the flu?
I don't know.
Sucking on it because you're such a little fucking baby.
You're such a little baby.
Guys, I'm taking a lot of shit. But you're early on here already.
You are. It's been pretty heavy. It's been a pretty heavy flow. But
it's been very, like, most information in this episode has been fake.
But it is, but to your point for real, it is, I think one of the things that makes it so hard to be, well, for me and anybody who can identify with what you just said, which is, you know, waiting around and to see if it goes away. And one of the reasons why I feel like it sometimes is hard to actually go see the doctor when something actual that needs attention crops up or pops up is that you have so many of those things that do just go away. Like those are like 99.9% of all the things that happen to you. They just go away. So when that like 0.01 thing comes along that you need to go get checked out, how do you know? Like, is it, especially if it's not something that like is crazy severe, like you're going, oh, my hands are a little numb. My feet are sore. Like, oh, this must be what it's like to be, you know, almost 40. Like, how do you know that that's the thing?
Well, did you let this go for a long while?
Probably longer than I should have, because I was really busy. And I think that's the other component is that we live really busy lifestyles. And I don't so much anymore. My life has really gotten a lot quieter because I can't keep that up any longer. Mm. But I just had babies to take care of and, like, you know, boys to send off to school and my own work to do. And yeah, I just kept sort of pushing it off to the side. And that fall, it started to be very much more consistent. So it was kind of coming and going throughout the summer. And then in the fall, it was like in the evening, my feet were tired. And then when I woke up, my feet were tired and sore. And once I got on them and I was moving, it was, you know, it would wear off in, you know, 15 or 20 minutes. And it got better, you know. And then I had this window of time in the day where I was perfectly fine. I felt totally normal and perfectly fine. Mm. And then as time progressed, that window started to close and get smaller and smaller and smaller.
The window where you felt good.
Yeah, yeah. And when I felt good, I felt completely pain-free. But
see, that would make it even more confusing. It's like, oh, well, it's a morning thing and a night thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a morning into the afternoon / like early evening thing. Oh, it's pretty much all day except for 3 to 4. I should go get checked. Like,
totally. And the funny thing about all that too is that you start to justify in your head why you're feeling this way, right? And I think your body almost like acclimatizes to things. You go, this is just how I feel now.
Yeah.
Right. And then probably you know, I got through that school year and I was like, weird things are happening, but I just kept sort of pushing it away. And then that spring, so almost at the end of the school year, that spring, I had a pretty intense flare up to the point where I couldn't work for a couple of days. And that was the first time that I had to take time away from work because of what was going on.
What does a flare up look like? Like what, like, I mean, also this is a flare up before you even know what a flare up is.
Totally.
But
you're right. Looking, it's only in hindsight that I'm calling it a flare up. Yeah. At the time I thought I had done something. I had like, you know, overdone it physically
in some way. Yeah, you just fucked up somehow. You're like, oh, I must have done this thing. So what was happening in your body? Like, how did it present itself?
So initially it was like very tender sore feet in the morning and in the evening and just a little bit of stiffness in my hands, right? Just when I would wake up, my hands would be stiff and achy. And then once I got moving and doing things, everything would loosen up. Same with my feet. And but in the spring, actually, this happened at improv. We were doing an improv game and I collided with two students, right? And I fell back. And when I fell, I did something to my shoulder. So I fell, you know, the three of us collided and then I fell on the floor. And my shoulder just was not right for a few days after that. And then, you know, a couple days passed and I thought, this should be easing up by now, right? And I think, again, in like looking back, you know, my body handles inflammation differently now. It really holds on to it in a way that's different than before the onset. So I think, you know, my doctor would characterize I had sort of like a slow onset, and some people have like a really quick, immediate chronic onset.
Mm-hmm.
And mine was very slow. And then I had to go, I had to have physiotherapy on my shoulder, and I had, you know, it just was hanging on and I couldn't get rid of this pain in the shoulder. And so that was the first major incident. That sort of was a red flag for me going, this is more than just, maybe it's time to sort of investigate this a little bit.
So did you go to physiotherapy first for your shoulder? Or did you go see your doctor first?
Yeah, I went to my doctor first who gave me sort of like the prescription for physiotherapy.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was taking, you know, different sorts of anti-inflammatory things, Advil and whatnot, to sort of help. And it just wasn't helping anymore.
But at that point, there's no like indicator or any cause for concern that it might be something more than just like an inflamed muscle.
Right.
Right.
Right. And except that it held on for so much longer. Even the physiotherapist said, this is unusually, you know, you're hanging on to this for an unusually long amount of time.
You're very, very weak. You're a very weak, genetically, I think you're just weak. I'm very sorry.
Most 99% of patients recover from this in much
The physiotherapist term. Grabbed your arm, moved your shoulder around, and then went, yes, genetically, weak. Yeah. I can feel it. It's in your genes.
I have to be honest, my physiotherapist was very handsome.
Yeah, okay.
So I was okay with it.
Yeah, sweet.
I was okay with it.
This also makes it hard because you just weren't listening to a fucking word he was saying.
No, I was like I did just falling into his eyes.
Keep touching my shoulder.
I did so much physiotherapy as a young kid with hockey and so many injuries, and like that was always so distracting.
The hot physiotherapy.
It always seemed like every physiotherapist was like 25 mm-hmm. and good looking, and mm-hmm. I'd be like,
Do you guys feel that way about massage therapists? Like when you go into a massage therapy, I got a pedicure the other day for Christmas, and I went in to get my pedicure done, and the pedicurist, pedicure giver,
pedicurian,
she was so beautiful, and I immediately fell deeply in love.
Of course, mm-hmm. as you do.
I took my wedding ring off and I went to throw it at her face, but then I realized, not the time. So I put it back on. And then, so she started like,
when she was done, you took it off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Threw it at her face. She was massaging my feet and like, and talking to me and like, and she, you know, I paint my toes. So she didn't know that she thought I was there for like the man's pedicure. I was like, no. I'm here for like,
give me the real shit.
I want the fucking real thing. So she was like, oh, okay, pick your color. And then I was like, well, you pick my color. And it was like this very like flirtatious thing.
And then
this is going nowhere. So I'm literally just reliving the
well,
the
you said that I'm a massage therapist, but I don't feel that way about massage therapists, because when I go to get a massage, it's always for a very specific like,
yeah,
yo, beat me up.
Whoa, dude. So a very aggressive rub and tug? Is that...
Guys, I don't feel comfortable where any of this has gone in the last little bit.
All right.
That was fucking funny.
Was your physiotherapist, was his name Warren?
It wasn't. Okay, but Warren sounds yummy.
Yeah, there's a well-known physiotherapist name. I think he's a physiotherapist. Warren, he's really good. He's great at his job and comes highly recommended. And actually, I've sent a few athletes to him, but he's also like...
super handsome.
Like very well-known for being like a really handsome
guy.
That's got to be... like, I mean, it, honestly, just... it's got to be hard to be that good looking and be someone who like good looking doctors, good looking dentists.
I don't find it that
not
bad.
Not a dentist.
Being like,
not a dentist.
Dude, you're a dentist.
No, a dentist is like fucking.
Brian feels okay
here,
about it.
How hot is this? I'm good looking, Jer. Open your mouth.
No,
how hot is that?
I know, but it's just like, I don't know. You know,
Chris is going to kill me that I'm telling this story, but Chris and I like converse about
Chris
these things.
Chris is your
it's my hubs.
Husband.
Yeah. And I, so we both
and
regularly.
You guys met. He was one of your students, right? He was.
so not okay. So not okay. Like, especially now.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Joking, where we
Chris.
Are now.
Just joking, Chris.
The line is there, and Jared's like 10, 20, 50 feet
yeah,
past
there,
the line.
There goes your job.
yeah. So I said to my husband one time, we see the same massage therapist, and. She's lovely. And I said, like, how is that from a man's perspective? Mm. Does it ever feel weird? And he was like, no, what are you talking about? And I was like, don't, like, you know, it's she's a woman and she's attractive and she's kind and,
she's
you know.
She's physically manipulating
and she's,
you.
You know.
That's physical touch, yeah.
Right? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I said, you know, I won't get too explicit, but I was like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he knows.
And he was like, no, that's never happened. And I thought, okay, I wonder if you're being truthful and honest with me about that.
If Seinfeld did an episode about it, then it happened.
It happens.
Everybody knows.
And back to the physical touch component, even like, even sometimes I'm a straight woman, but sometimes it's just tingly and feels great. It doesn't matter who's touching you.
Yeah, especially when you have like a torn groin.
I think it moved.
Oh my God. That's the
Seinfeld quote.
I thought you were just talking about right now. I was like, Taylor, I just said torn groin. Relax.
Stop it.
Oh no.
So,
okay, let's fucking rein it back in here.
So, Mo, how did you find out that you had arthritis?
Oh, right. That's what we're here for.
Oh, fuck.
So I went through another school year of just sort of managing pain with a lot of Advil, Tylenol, et cetera. And then I had another flare up. And at that point I went to my doctor. I had stopped in to see my doctor and had said, listen, I think something weird is going on. And she sent me for blood tests and nothing came back.
What? Sorry. And just
is
to go back
they,
to that.
Is that how they find out? Blood tests?
Partially.
I'm curious though about that. That first flare up, like what do you say to your work when you're calling in and like not going into work for those days? Because it's
my
knuckles are
sore. Sorry, I can't come in and teach drama because my knuckles are sore.
And my feet, I think I was on my feet too long yesterday and everybody's like, yeah, we all were.
Yeah,
like,
so were we.
Yeah.
Like,
Shut the fuck up.
Is that a hard
yeah,
thing to
you know
do,
what? I think that's part of it too, is that I am, you know, speaking of like the times that we're living and working in, the times that we're living and working in as the profession of teachers is particularly challenging.
Especially here
right now in Nova Scotia. Yeah. Yes. And has been for the last few years and I suspect is going to continue to be challenging. And so that's, I think, part of the reason I looked at my colleagues who were tired and exhausted and having their own health issues and I didn't want to whine and make my crap part of what was going on there. So I think that's part of why I ignored it in some ways for a long, long time.
But it's kind of like prior to knowing that you have arthritis, it's much harder to say,
totally.
Like, oh, I'm sore than like when you actually have a diagnosis and
totally.
You're like, oh, it's arthritis. And they're like, oh.
I'm really lucky that at the time I had a department head who was very understanding and who would just tell me, take care of yourself. You can't do your job if you're not well, if you're not feeling well enough. And then,
especially if you're like the only teacher out of the entire faculty whose job is to like run around and bump into other students. You know what I mean? Like there's no fucking math teacher that's like, ah, I gotta take the day off today. Me and three students collided in the middle of the math class and I fell and hit my shoulder. You know, like there's no other teacher doing that. Even the gym teacher's like, no, I'm just on the sidelines. Like,
Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Are you tired of hearing the same old wellness advice? It's time to dig deeper and listen to America Dissected from Crooked Media, the podcast that's cutting into the science, culture, and policy that shapes our health. From doctors fighting for their rights to the surprising truths about sunscreen, America Dissected dives deep into the state of health. Tune in every Tuesday for new episodes of America Dissected, available on all major podcast platforms.
I always have this feeling whenever I'm too, whether it's I get the flu or I have a cold, that's usually like the only things that kind of keep me out, unless I haven't had an injury in a while, but that's something where I can't go to work, can't teach yoga, whatever it is. I always have this sense of guilt. There's totally. This big sense of guilt. And I was just thinking about that while you were saying when Brian asked that question, and I was thinking, do I feel that way because there was like a number of times when I was younger where I actually faked being sick so I could stay home from school, and now I'm worried as an adult
that I'll get caught.
Not that I'm going to get caught because I'm not faking being sick
that
anymore.
That my mom will find out.
but yeah, I'm just constantly concerned that my mom's going to call
me. Your
mom
just calls you.
Are you at home? Are you at home? Are you at home today? Why aren't you at work? But I'm wondering if that sense of guilt for me comes from that or for some of us where you're like, oh fuck, they're not going to believe I'm sick.
Because I was saying that I had the flu last week and Maddie had the flu really bad too. And she was supposed to teach yoga in Quebec City, which is like a 5-hour drive from Ottawa. And,
totally worth teaching one class for $50.
But she does it. It's a regular. Anyway, I don't need to justify it to you guys. But it was really important to her to be there too, and she was throwing up sick in Ottawa at 9 o'clock on the Saturday night, and she had to be there at 9 o'clock in Quebec City on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So she's like, I'm just going to go to sleep. I'm going to wake up at 3 a.m. and I'm going to drive there and like try to be there on time. And it was just so like, it was such an extreme thing to try to do, to try to get there and be there. But she just felt so guilty.
Yeah.
But the reason why I'm bringing her up is because like, I don't think she was the type of person to fake sick when she was younger too. Yet like the guilt for
her was that sense of guilt.
Mm-hmm. And she just felt so bad about it. And ultimately like, you have to take care of yourself. Yeah. Like there,
my problem was I did fake sick and am really sick. So when I would fake sick and play up the fact that I actually am sick. So it was a lot easier to fake it and lie and get away with it. So then when it came time where I really was sick, I was like, are they going to believe me though this time? Cause like I, you know, it was like Boy Who Cried Wolf kind of almost.
I also remember you dragging your ass to school though, for times when you, at times when you really should have been home.
Yeah, for sure.
I gotta be at improv. Like this is happening.
Well,
or,
if it had
anything
to do
like
with the stuff that I loved, but like every, that there was two things that I loved at school, which was improv and you.
Oh.
But I wonder where that comes from.
I was going to say improv and drama, but then just you came out.
Where does it come from? That sense of is it letting people down?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is it feeling like someone is judging you or thinking that you're lying?
I personally think it's the, okay. So for example, when you're talking about me dribbling, the incontinence thing, you're obviously joking, yet there's probably a small portion of people who are like, maybe, you know, like and I think that when you're sick and when you call in sick, it's like you're worried there's that small like inkling or possibility that they think that you don't want to be there or that you're that maybe like for whatever reason you shouldn't
because
be there.
They are there and they're like, I'm fucking here and you should be here too.
Mm-hmm. And when you're, you know, there's lots of jobs where this is the case, but when you're teaching, there's, you know, I've taught 90 kids a day. So there's 90 people that you're letting down.
Yeah.
plus your colleagues who may have to cover for you, or you know what I mean? So there's that. I mean, there has been some crazy, crazy situations where I had subs come in and like the fucking shit that happened was insane. So
we used to just destroy substitute teachers. Yeah. My God, it's such a sin.
It's terrible.
They're chum and the students are sharks.
Why? Totally. Why?
Because they're weak. They're just weak.
You can smell it.
Weak.
You can smell it, man. It's
yeah.
But right. Like some subs are like the best.
Yep.
And they come in and they lay it down and they're just like an alpha that comes in and goes, this is what's going on. And some subs come in.
They're the hard
just,
Nelson.
And you just go,
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
And at the height of my illness before my diagnosis, we had like two very specific scenarios where I had called in sick because of, you know, my symptoms that I didn't know were rheumatoid arthritis symptoms, and had insane situations happen. I had a sub come into my classroom and curse and swear at the kids, call them little fuckers, told them they were the equivalent of prostitutes because they were actors. Like this insane, insane stuff.
It wasn't because they're actors, it's because of a sack full. But
Brian digging another step.
That's also true.
And you know
that's fucking gnarly. Yeah, did they get fired?
This sub was, I truly don't know this person's name, but this sub was escorted from the building by admin. I got a phone call. I'm home, miserable, sick, with like you know when
they were
you
having a bad day, man,
a bad life.
They were
maybe.
Having a bad, bad week.
I got a phone call from guidance. Just so you know, this is what you're coming into tomorrow. You know. Drama students are incredibly emotionally attached to their teacher.
Uh-huh.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Because the dynamic in a drama classroom is that the students are the textbooks. So the relationship is really important. Yeah. And
I was so open with my drama teacher. And I wasn't even – drama wasn't something that I was, like, particularly attached to.
Or good at. I can tell you that.
hey, I could act. No, I could act if I was put on the spot. But I was, like – my drama teacher was, you know, very buddy-buddy and very open and honest with my drama teacher, even though I wasn't particularly, you know.
Yeah, because if you're expecting young people to take risks, you have to be willing to show that you'll take a risk too. Mm-hmm. And it's very, there's like this mutual respect develops really quickly, mm-hmm. right?
Public speaking would have ever happened if I had not taken drama.
Like
doing monologues and speaking in front of people and being willing to study something and then regurgitate it and be with somebody and look into their eyes and play a character, like it's really fucking profound.
It's humanizing. And there's a lot in education right now that separates the body and the brain, and drama is one of a handful of places in education where both of those things have to be accessed at the same mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so crazy subs, and I had guilt about that. And then, you know, I never felt good about calling in sick until I had my diagnosis. And Brian, you're right. Then I felt like that was permission to take care of myself for the first time. Mm-hmm. I was really thankful for my diagnosis mm-hmm. when I finally got it.
So what? How do they do it? They're like, they take some blood.
So I had,
initially, knee with that little hammer?
No, I hate that. Don't you hate that?
I love it.
I know.
Taylor doesn't think that it works.
I think it's a fucking myth.
No, it isn't.
It works for me.
Reflex, yeah,
it doesn't work for me, and I got fucking...
It will, right here. Watch.
Back up.
I think your leg has to be dangling.
Yeah.
Okay, so for those of you who can't see, which is everybody watching this, Jeremy is setting up in front of Taylor. They're facing one another now. Taylor is sitting with his legs really wide open.
I can't let my feet dangle because my legs...
Dude, you got short-ass legs. Let those feet dangle. Here we go.
So his feet are dangling. That's not going to work. No, he's tapping.
Here, one sec.
Jerry's hitting his... He's hitting his knee quite aggressively.
Now you're just hitting my shin.
Nothing's happening.
I think you're fucking sick, dude. You probably got arthritis.
Oh, shit.
So they take your blood, but how do they actually figure this out?
So initially... my family doctor sent me for the basic set of blood tests and nothing showed up. And so they look at inflammation, the inflammation levels in your blood.
Ah, yes.
Right? Nothing showed up. And then there was questions about, was there a history of it in my family? No, there wasn't. And that was the other, usually that's the other clincher, is that there's a, you know, the doctor can say, well, look at all these members of your family that also have this struggle. No one in my family had it, mm-hmm. which is very, very unusual. Usually there's both of those things, inflammation when you take a blood test, and then some family members with a history of it. So I didn't have any of that. And so she just, you know, sort of put me on something to help manage the pain. But that was really the end of it. That was like, okay, let's go away and see if you can manage the pain. And initially that I got really frustrated. That was not enough. That was just not enough.
Like you wanted more.
I didn't want to manage the pain. I wanted to know what was wrong with me.
You wanted more answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I had this flare up in the spring and I was out of school for a week because I literally, the medication, I was taking naproxen at that time daily, every day just to get through the day.
Yeah, your liver loved that.
Right. And I knew it was bad for me, and but at the same time, I just had to get up and live my life. So I was completely torn. And then I had this massive flare up where I couldn't work for a week. And it took me, normally if something would happen, I could, you know, I was figuring out these ways of calming it down. So I would do like cold baths, hot baths, or I would do, you know, I would ice what was hurting, and then I would heat just above it at the joint above it to like draw the inflammation. I had sort of figured out all that just from research and asking the right people. I had this team of women, I kid you not, literally getting me through my workday. I was seeing an acupuncturist, a naturopath, a massage therapist, you know, a chiropractor. Yeah.
A crystal specialist. Yeah,
yeah. A shaman.
Naturally.
But literally, looking back, these women were keeping me.
Yeah.
And then I was also trying to wife and mom at the same time. Ooh. It was insane. I look back, I don't know how I did it.
Did you ever look that week that you had the flare up? Did you ever look to see if Mercury was in retrograde?
Because that probably could have solved all your problems.
Yeah, I wish I'd thought of that. I feel really stupid now. And then that flare up just pushed me to a point where I was like, that's enough. I am just going to go, I'm going into my family doctor and I'm just going to lay down the law. Mm. And so I went in and I was like, listen, I can't live like this anymore. At this point, I had been doing enough, like literally Googling on my own, all of my symptoms and, you know, almost diagnosing myself at this point.
So like the word rheumatoid arthritis was floating around in your head.
It definitely was at that point.
Okay, yeah.
Because a huge portion of rheumatoid arthritis, like in terms of, you know, that idea of like pain in the morning, pain in the evening, that's a big symptom. Yeah. Because it's the lack of movement creates the stiffness. So as you rest, which you need because you're fatigued, but as you rest, it's sort of like the inflammation settles in. And so then you need to sort of, in the RA, we say motion is lotion. So you have to, the movement is important.
Mm.
Okay. So then I really pushed with my family doctor and I said, listen, can you just send me to a rheumatologist to eliminate it? Just to like knock it out of the running, because I think that's what it is. Also, side note,
you're not diagnosed at this point?
I'm still not diagnosed.
Oh, so they gave you the pain. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I thought you said they diagnosed you and then they gave you naproxen. That seems really subdued.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was just naproxen for the pain. And side note, which I really believe is connected, when I was pregnant with my second son, who's six now, I was insanely fatigued. It was crazy. And I went to my family doctor and explained this to her. And I thought, okay, this is what it's like to have a toddler and be working and be pregnant. And she said, no, this is not the right amount of fatigue. You're exhausted. So I would teach all day, come home and sleep from 3 to 5 just to be awake until 10 o'clock. It was exhausting. I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism at that point. Mm. That's important because there's a lot of, like, I guess the word would be comorbidity of hypothyroidism and rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And any autoimmune issue, there's, you know, anything that, because hypothyroidism is autoimmune. So it seems to me that once you are in one camp of something that's autoimmune, it's not too far off that something else could crop up in your life.
Right.
Right? Because these are triggered. So they say with hypothyroidism, it's triggered by an intense life event. Which
like
I
pushing
think,
a baby out of
right,
your vagina.
Which I think was my first son. Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what other things would qualify as intense life events? Like that's, I guess
like
that makes sense.
Physically pushing intense traumas.
Okay.
So, or life events. So, you know, I think there's probably a huge list. Anything that was like, is very physically demanding.
Okay.
Right? Having a baby is amazing, but also it takes so much out of your body, not just the actual birth process, but 9 months. For 9 months, this like creature is leaching things from your body.
It's fucking
to
bizarre.
Build. Yeah. It's to.
Is it really that hard?
Pass me that bottle of Prosecco.
The subscriber level just like fucking plummeted. Yeah. Yeah, like a 90% female listenership.
It's a joke.
Our listenership is now 100% male, and it's 40
and that's
people.
Five men.
I think women will hang on because all three of you are so cute.
Oh, that's very thanks. Sweet.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so then I finally pushed and my doctor said, fine, I'll refer you to this rheumatologist. And so that was in May. And she sent off the reference and a month passed and I didn't hear anything. This speaks to to our health system, I think, in Nova Scotia, mm-hmm. this portion of the story. A month went by and I called my family doctor. I said, I still haven't heard from the rheumatologist, like not even the date of my appointment. Mm-hmm. Oh, not to worry. It takes time. Another 2 weeks went by. So this is 6 weeks altogether. Mm. And I said, you know what? I called back. I said, if you don't call, I'm going to call their office. At this point, I was like really self-advocating.
And also looking for a new family doctor.
I will say good my luck. Family doctor's awesome. Yeah, no. And, but
you gotta get shit done.
You gotta get shit done. And nobody, you are the only person that knows your body.
Yeah, exactly. And also you need to, everyone needs to advocate for themselves, especially not because it's your doctor, because of the system.
Totally.
It's not just Nova Scotia. It's the whole country.
Yep.
It's just the way that our system
works.
It's
just a really overworked system in all aspects right now. Yeah. Right?
What does a rheumatologist do?
They specialize, like it's a good question because it's so interesting. It's such a very specific thing to be specialized in, right?
Have you guys seen the movie Room?
I have, yeah.
What do you think?
I read the book.
M?
Yeah.
Room. R-O-O-M?
How else do you think you spell rheumatologist? R-O-O-M-A-T-O-L-O-G-Y. Rheumatology. Rheumatology is a branch of medicine devoted to the diagnosis and therapy of rheumatic diseases. Mm-hmm. Physicians who have undergone formal training in rheumatology are called rheumatologists.
What falls under the category of
rheumatic?
Rheumatic.
Yeah.
Obviously. Well,
let's find out. Rheumatic diseases is an umbrella term for conditions causing chronic, often intermittent pain affecting the joints and or connective tissue. I bet you Ehlers-Danlos might be considered a rheumatic condition.
Possibly.
I don't know. Sources dealing with rheumatism tend to focus on arthritis. Let's see. What do we got here? We got, holy fuck, ankylosing spondylitis, relapsing polychondritis.
Don't try to say all those.
System lupus, endothelioma, rheumatoid arthritis, gout. Man, I hate that word, gout. Yeah. Juvenile arthritis. Oh, this is a great one. Sjögren. Syndrome.
I think they have that at IKEA.
They do. Scleroderma, polymyositis, derma. Guys, I thought we covered a lot of diseases on the show. I haven't heard of.
Isn't it
any
amazing?
Of these fucking things.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
I guess
I'll tell you something interesting about the rheumatologist's office. Every time I go there, like I'm middle age. I'm just going to own it. 40 is middle age. Okay. Every time I go there, I am the youngest person in the room by 25 years.
Yeah, totally.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But rheumatoid arthritis, often the onset is middle age, like between 30 and 50.
So why aren't there other people in your age group that are seeing the rheumatologist?
I don't know. It's a good question. And it's often women. It's predominantly women that suffer from rheumatoid arthritis. Now, I suspect that some of these older people that I see in the doctor's office are...
They've been going,
right? Yeah. That sometimes is something I worry about and a concern I have is like, how will this affect me as I age? Mm-hmm. And will I be able to, you know, something Chris and I have started thinking about is not thinking about retiring, but like having little mini retirements throughout.
Is it degenerative? Like,
yeah, especially if not, like if you, depending on how the medication works for you and when you catch it. So when I finally did get my diagnosis, which was amazing. I went in and she said, you know, my rheumatologist has this amazing accent that I cannot duplicate. And
are you sure?
I could. No,
you're a drama teacher. Come on, what the fuck?
I don't know her name.
We wouldn't like.
Maybe I shouldn't use her name.
Rheumatoid.
She's just got this beautiful accent, and she's very firm and strict with me.
Are you sure you don't want to try it?
I'll try it. I'll go for it. Go. So she'll go, like, Erin, tell me your story. It's calming, but also you're afraid of her a little bit.
Can we guess where she's from based on how you do the accent?
Bulgaria.
I was going to say Egypt.
Can you give me a smaller taste?
So I told my story. And
tell her, say, Erin, your knuckles are swollen.
Erin. Your knuckles are swollen. Nope, that's sounding a little bit Irish. Yeah, kind of like Irish, Middle Eastern.
Sounded Japanese.
That's Middle Eastern.
Very Japanese.
My husband's going to love this because he says I always sound, every accent I do sounds like I'm trying to play a Mexican character.
So I was Googling rheumatoid arthritis. I kind of fell down a hole. The photos are
scary, right?
Very scary.
How does that happen?
This looks like a horror, a scene from a horror film.
Yeah.
I'm not even fucking joking.
And so pre-diagnosis, this is the shit I was coming across, Jesus, and I was freaking out. Yeah.
Dude, look at that.
Yeah.
Is that not fucking crazy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you're at home, just Google rheumatoid arthritis, hit images, and prepare yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always just the hands? Like, these hands are fucked.
You know what? It usually starts in the extremities, hands and feet, so fingers and toes, and then wrists, ankles, and then it sort of like literally progresses its way in depending on when you get your diagnosis.
So do you think all witches have rheumatoid arthritis?
Yeah.
Witches know. Noses definitely have it. Their hands definitely have it. It is very scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff as I was researching that I was encountering. And to be honest with you, I was starting to see changes in my own hands and feet. So you probably couldn't tell. But like
your hands look good.
They look all right.
Yeah.
But and my toes, like I have some weird crooked toes now. I'm really self-conscious about when I go to the beach.
That weren't like that.
No. Now my husband will say, you always had ugly feet.
Yeah.
He always tells me that.
Such a sweet man.
Now they're... he is really lovely.
If he's honest like that, then of course he definitely is.
He always told me, you know, your feet are not your best,
you,
your best quality.
I love those feet.
That's actually a quote. That's a direct quote. It's like you were there when he said that.
Did you write it in cursive writing on your wall?
But I do have some weird, like, freaky toes now that I feel really... So when I go for a pedicure...
You're like,
I
don't
always,
look, just do it without looking.
So it's a really messy, messy paint job usually. Yeah, it's crazy. So I have some crooked toes now, and I can see where some of my fingers started to turn in.
How does that happen? Like, what is happening in your joints to make it
I believe it's
different?
Swelling.
Yeah, so what happens is, actually, so I've seen the x-rays of my hands and feet that my rheumatologist sent me for, and basically the swelling starts to eat away at the tissue in the joint. So it, like, eats it away and replaces it. So when the swelling is gone, then there's parts of your joints that are missing and don't exist anymore.
So the synovial membrane or the synovial fluid, it thickens. It gets the synovial membrane thickens. And so that basically causes the swelling, and then the swelling would cause the contorting, I'm guessing, based off of this Mayo Clinic image.
Thank you, Mayo.
And you can, but like that was starting to freak me out.
Mm-hmm,
I wouldn't say I'm super, you know, concerned about, you know, I'm not full of myself when I think about looks and things like that, but we all want to, you know,
we all look our best.
We all care, right? About what we look like.
Yeah. You don't want to look like a witch that can't afford an enchantment.
Potions.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to hide in plain sight.
No, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to be a witch, I'm going to just 100% go for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to, like, run.
Straight to the woods.
Straight into that direction, put on my cloak, like, fire up my cauldron.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Get your ass on that
And
broom.
Make some kind of potion.
How do they make their skin green? Like, what is it that does that?
I think it's lack of cleaning.
Also, you're talking about, like, that's not real witch.
That's a Disney witch.
You ever see a real witch? Fucking terrifying. Right?
Actually, I've seen some beautiful real witches.
Yeah.
Like gorgeous women.
Well, those are enchantments. Yeah, you got to know how to make those enchantments.
That would be my first potion then.
Mm-hmm. How, so when you get your diagnosis, like how is this getting into, I mean, So you're fatigued all the time, and the fatigue is a massive part. And obviously, I'm assuming that not just the fatigue, but also like your movements, how you are going through your day, how you're doing your job, how you're interacting with your children, how you're interacting with your husband, with your friends, and everything is compromised in that way. Like, how did that, especially once you got your diagnosis and you can see and look back in hindsight that like this has been affecting you, but mm-hmm. now you're
and now you know why.
Now you know why. Mm. How is that, how does that affect you in like all of those aspects of your life and like interacting?
I remember there was a point where I couldn't comfortably get down on the floor to play dinkies and being really sad about that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That mm-hmm. I couldn't get down with my little guys and play dinkies because I couldn't comfortably put my feet underneath me, or I couldn't bend. You know, when you crouch and your toes kind of bend, yeah. I couldn't do those things. It was starting to impact my teaching because my teaching is so physical.
And you couldn't play dinkies with the students either.
I couldn't do any more dinky play at school.
Yeah. Did it make you feel sick? Did it make you feel sick or did it make you feel old?
Both, probably.
Do you know what I mean? Like
mostly just old. Mm. Mostly old. And pre-diagnosis, I kept thinking, like, God, this aging thing really sucks. Mm-hmm. A close to 40 is horrific.
Because it is not something you think about as being sick. You know, like of going, oh, my bones ache. Like, that's right. That's not a sick feeling.
And even now, 2 years into the diagnosis, it's like one of those, and I'm sure you've had people on the show that talk about this all the time. It's one of those things like, I don't look sick.
Right. Yeah, you've got that invisible disability
thing. I don't look sick, and I'm really thankful that a lot of my methods and therapies and medications are really making it so that I'm not sick a lot of the time. Mm. But then when I do get sick or have a flare up,
it's hardcore.
It's wicked.
Yeah. Were you on some like crazy meds?
I still am.
Were you doing the cancer meds?
Yeah.
What's it called again?
It's called methotrexate.
Okay. I thought it started with an I, but I'm sure there's a few.
Yeah.
Is that one of the ones you call? Did Meg take that? Didn't she call it meth? She was like, I'm taking meth?
Maybe, yeah. I feel like she was taking one that started with an I. I don't know why I was thinking that.
Methotrexate?
Methotrexate. Yeah. It's a DMARD, which is a disease-modifying anti-rheumatoid drug.
How do you take it? Is it pill?
There's lots of different ways. I take a very small dose once a week. And when I don't take it, my body reminds me I haven't taken it. I always take it Friday nights. When I first started taking it, I was nauseous. That was probably, you know, sometimes when like the cure is just as bad as the disease, I felt nauseous for 48 hours every time I took it because it's in big doses, it's used to fight cancer.
Is it a chemo?
Like yeah.
So you're basically
so
like
in large doses, it fights cancer.
You're like microdosing chemo.
Yeah. Which is like
so trippy.
That's so
just
toxic, taking
these little
bits of poison.
It's really interesting because is this one of those things that like you get diagnosed with an illness, you start taking this medication and it makes you feel better, but if you stop, it's much worse?
So initially, the day I got my diagnosis, my rheumatologist sent me out to start a prednisone. So a series, sort of like a descending
steroid.
Descending prescription of prednisone. So I started out with like 6 a day for a week and then 5 a day.
Do you have crazy food cravings while you're on it?
I was hungry a lot and put a little bit of weight on, which is not, I didn't do too bad, but
that was when you got into the Olympic lifting, right?
Yeah.
I felt like that was my only shot.
I was surprised that you lift way more than I did. Like I was feeling pretty good.
And then I was supposed to start my methotrexate right away. So the prednisone was just temporary to like immediately stop the swelling, bring down the swelling. And as bad as it is, that is a miracle drug. In 48 hours, I felt 50% better. I kid you not.
Wow.
Yeah. And within a week, I felt like almost like myself.
This is with the methotrexate?
This is with the prednisone. Okay. Yeah. But you can't do that long term, right? No. So that's just to like really shock your body into managing the inflammation. And then the methotrexate is my long term. And I'm on the smallest dose possible because I'm trying everything else to manage it, right? So I'm doing my rheumatologist said, like, you're young, you're strong, you're otherwise healthy. This is the right choice. It's an aggressive choice. There's lots of other options. And last year at my like annual sort of my 1 year anniversary, I asked her like, okay, so now we've got things kind of under control. is there another direction we can go in? And she was like, why would we do that? You're having the perfect response to this. I have to get blood tests monthly because it's so terrible for your liver.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what's
that's crazy.
Like, is that drug taking time off your life? Like,
I worry about that. I really do. And when I, last year, I went, you know, I expressed that concern. Like, it's great. I want to feel good now. I want to be able to take care of my children. I want to live my life. But am I making this decision and am I sort of like shortening things at the other end, right? how is this decision to feel good now affecting how I age?
Are you taking, I know inflammation, chronic inflammation is like a pretty, pretty hot topic. yeah. It's total myth.
No one should
believe it. it's a pretty hot topic and there's lots of stuff out there there's lots of theories out there that are basically saying that, you know, inflammation is basically like the foundation that leads to like all this other shit that happens in your body and it's caused by XYZ. And you get this big wide spectrum from like kooky to like ultra scientific.
Like we can cure with yoga. Like yoga is the number one cure.
Right. Like that there, as a person who teaches yoga, I guarantee there are thousands of people out there that would say that. Mm-hmm. And I would say, I would reconsider only prescribing yoga.
I think yoga is a huge part of how I manage.
And one of the question that I had was, what do you do in conjunction with your like pharmaceuticals that helps you with inflammation, like yoga or natural medicines and things like that?
Yeah, so I take a large number of supplements. So I take a lot of omega-3 and
you're on that turmeric?
Turmeric, lots of turmeric,
magnesium?
golden magnesium. Yeah. I eat a lot of like, and I try to take a lot of that through what I eat, but I do take supplements as well. So, you know, I regularly eat Brazil nuts because they have magnesium in them.
Least favorite nut. Oh. Don't they taste like dirt to you?
They're not great, but I eat them because it's good for me.
I didn't know that there is, I don't do enough research, I think, sometimes into some of the stuff that I put into my body, but, I take magnesium as a supplement and I didn't know that, there were like good.
But you're accidentally taking mercury I can't see anymore.
Why am I losing my hair?
Oh shit. I read that wrong.
Yeah.
Thought it was magnesium. It's mercury.
But, I didn't know Brazil nuts were a good.
Yeah. And also Epsom salts, have a lot of.
On your fries?
Massive, yeah, yeah. Massive anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
And like physically, yoga is something that you dabble in?
Yeah. Oh, multiple times a week, especially if I'm so I go to classes throughout the week and then I practice on my own if I feel something's cropping up.
Motion is lotion, you know what I'm saying?
Motion is lotion. And it's really interesting because I can't, like, I'm in this really weird zone now because I can't not exercise because then I don't feel good, right? I need the movement, but I can't over-exercise anymore either.
Yeah.
There's this real sweet zone that I have to stay in.
You're like a large breed dog that's when it's a puppy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you got to exercise it, but you can't over-exercise it because you're going to fuck it in the long run.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So true.
That's what everybody wants to be.
I love being compared to a dog too. Like women love that.
Yeah. Especially when you go, you're like a large breed dog.
You know, the slobbery kind with like the heavy jowl.
Yeah, Bigby. You're Bigby as a puppy.
Oh my God. Bigby is precious though.
It's funny because
that's not an insult.
You said it in like a totally, like in your world, it was really endearing.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, really.
In your reality, it was really nice thing to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the shared reality, it was
not so nice. Yeah. The shared reality. Yeah.
As long as you can discuss it after you say it, it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's lots of, it's not just the medication that's why I'm on the smallest dose possible because I have this whole, a lot of my energy now goes into managing the disease. Mm. So I have regular, you know, I see my chiropractor regularly. I have a massage every 2 weeks like clockwork. I never miss it. If I do, I can feel it. I walk every day. I do yoga regularly throughout the week. I have to really be careful with what I eat. I have to really think about what I put in my body. There's lots of things I love to eat that I have to selectively eat now because I feel really shitty afterwards. Mm. Like that Prosecco is delicious and I'll have a couple more sips, but that's all I can do because the amount of sugar, sugar, which feeds inflammation. I have to be so careful about how much sugar I take
in. You
gotta
get on that, you gotta get on that tequila train. You know what I'm saying?
Ooh, tequila makes me throw up a little bit in the back of my mouth when I think about it.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
Or just like a water, like water.
Yeah, water helps too. I heard Joe Rogan was talking about, he said this, and it was something like white flour, white sugar, and one other thing, and I can't remember what it was, but it was like these three things. Yeah, I think, and white people.
Worst
things on the planet: white flour, white sugar, and white people.
that lead
white men. Yeah, I think is what you meant.
You know what? I was thinking that correction in my head, Brian. I really was.
Don't worry,
I'm really digging into 2019. but there's these things that like that when you consume them in large quantities, they lead to over long periods of time.
Destroying your body.
They're just like, it's not bad to have white bread. It's not bad to have white sugar.
But if you're
it's
eating
bad
it,
to
like,
have it every day, mm-hmm. all day
or every mm-hmm. meal for everything. Yeah, I mean, just think about the way that my parents fed me and like, you know, they didn't feed me trash. You know, I did grow up in Sackville, but they didn't feed me like I grew up in
Sackville.
I feel
like your parents were ahead of the curve.
They were a little bit ahead of the curve.
Yeah, they were a little.
But even then, they still weren't, I still wasn't being fed the utmost healthiest food that I could have been fed because they grew up with like, yes, like bread is a, you know, mm-hmm. white bread is okay. Like bread, you need that mm-hmm. as your daily intake of bread or, you know.
And a glass of milk in the morning.
That's right. Yeah, all that shit, you know. Mm. So.
Yeah, I mean, in our house now, we eat, and I don't want to ever put out the sense like that I don't love a chocolate bar now and then or that I don't enjoy a glass of wine or that I don't make a bunch of cookies. I do all that, but I thoughtfully do that now.
Yeah.
Whereas I used to just put things in my body. And so we eat a lot of whole food now and we eat a lot of grains and we don't avoid gluten, but we try to incorporate other kinds of things into, you know, into what we eat. So it's not always bread or, you know, mm-hmm. wheat products. We do a lot of rice and we do a lot of,
yeah. You can get a lot of that stuff elsewhere as well. Like
right,
the stuff that you get in bread, you can get elsewhere.
Yeah.
So it's not an absolute necessity.
Right.
And we have such a dependence on bread. Like I have a massive dependence on bread. So I was, I'm not like really strict vegetarian right now. But I was for six or seven years. And when I and meat in that transition, it was the realization of, oh wow, I really didn't think that a meal was a meal unless it had meat. And then I was a vegetarian, so I obviously ditched that concept. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that it was bread. Like a meal wasn't a meal without a bread. Like, oh, well, what is all this stuff without the fucking sandwich that puts it together that makes it feel hearty?
Oh my God, I love a good sandwich. Anyone who knows me
knows how I feel about sandwiches. I'm like, a meal isn't a meal unless I finish it with cereal.
Okay, I was actually this morning having a bowl of cornflakes, thinking about you as like a cereal aficionado.
Yeah.
Because that was one thing I really missed early on was I missed cereal.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I love it.
I know you do. You're passionate about it.
Why did you ditch cereal?
Because so much cereal is wheat based. It's like there's not a lot of non-wheat based cereal options.
And if there are, it's fucking garbage.
And that's because, is that because wheat in general is like an inflammatory?
Yeah. So, and again, I don't want you to think that I don't eat wheat. I do occasionally. But again, I'm not very often. So I try to only eat it a few times a week. Because I do, I literally can feel the accumulation in my joints. Mm-hmm. Gluten, it's, I think it's the gluten or I don't know, you know, there's lots of conversation about that too on how gluten is affecting us or not affecting
us. And glutens
us.
Are things like calories and fats.
Yeah,
and like
fats
kind of
are
like
fats
we learned
are
this from This Is the End,
this
right?
This Is the End, yeah. Seth Rogen is the
anything
authority.
That's bad for you is a gluten. Mm-hmm. Right.
It's all gluten. Yeah. How are you doing today? Like, how are you now?
Like today I feel great.
Is it a day by day sort of thing? Like you take it one day.
It can be because this time of year is tough for me. When it gets cold like this, it's very, very challenging on the joints. And summer is actually really tough for me because the humidity is really challenging on the joints. So
spring and fall are your jam.
So spring and fall are my jam. I love the fall.
Just moved to Arizona.
We Chris and I have had that conversation about you know moving somewhere where it's
dry as fuck.
Yeah. Halifax, as beautiful as it is not a great place for rheumatoid arthritis.
No.
We have a lot of humidity.
It's kind of like the worst place for rheumatoid arthritis. Vancouver would probably also not be that great. But
Taylor, your place would be miserable for it right now because you just got that humidifier.
It's been a game changer, man.
I honestly have very much enjoyed being in that space.
Brian's been making up excuses to come hang out at my house, which is fine. You're welcome to hang anytime.
The weird part, though, is how like your walls are now sweating. I think you got to change that. Like, there's literally just water dripping down your walls.
It's not so much water.
The wallpaper's peeling off.
It's mostly like
there's
mold.
A lot of mold. Yeah, it's like a mold thing,
dude. Yeah. Mold everywhere. Actually, no joke. On my windowsill yesterday, I'm in a new place.
It looked like it was a planter box, like,
dude. And I looked at this. There's this black stripping, like where the window meets the like frame of the window.
Yep.
And I looked at it.
His girlfriend's been gone for 3 days, and this pops up. This is the life you live.
Yeah, this is definitely because since Kyla left, everything's gone to shit.
it's good you know
and
that.
I noticed that there's mold on it, and I clean those things like you know fairly regularly, like once every couple of months. But I had just cleaned them recent, like not that long ago, and the humidifier fucking mold.
Do you think really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Whoa. Well, because like. It gets fucking humid and then that accumulates on the window and then it all drips down to the bottom stripping.
Why did you get a humidifier?
Because it's too dry and I got sick. I was waking up in the middle of the night like with a dry throat.
That doesn't make you sick.
It does.
Dryness doesn't make you... No, dude. Bacteria and virus make you sick.
Dude.
Saying dry makes you sick is the same thing as going, I didn't wear a hat and it's cold out today and I'm going to get a cold.
No, too dry conditions can make you sick.
No. No,
I feel like
guys,
it,
come on.
It's not like it's dry. You're sick. It's like it's dry, and that's a contributor to becoming sick. In conjunction with it's the winter and it's fucking cold outside. Your body temperature is changing all the time. When you go inside, you go outside. Mm-hmm.
This is fascinating. If this is real, I'm gonna curling up in front of a roaring fire, watching. Okay, hold on. This is get to the really shit. There's a reason why you get so sweaty in the summer, and it's not just of the heat. What the fuck? That's not what I looked up. Scorched sinuses. Okay, here we go. Cold, dry air pulls moisture from your mouth and nose, leaving your nasal passage dried out and your throat dry. Dry nostrils are more likely to crack and give you a nosebleed. Because your nose needs gooey mucus to trap viruses and other invaders.
Does it say gooey?
It does. Yeah, this is WebMD. Because your nose needs
gooey. That seems like an unprofessional word choice.
Gooey mucus and icky poo-poo in your nose trap the viruses and other icky invaders before they can get you sick. Dry nostrils can also make you more vulnerable to colds. Holy fuck, that's crazy.
And you can get a boo-boo.
And you can get a boo-boo in your nose. And the flu. That's fucking wild.
Yeah, dude, I wasn't fucking around. I didn't just make that up in my mind and then go to the store.
You make a lot of things up.
And you know what? But honestly, though, you hear a lot of shit that makes you think things for reasons.
Yeah, well, it's like that thing of like, oh, I went outside, it rained, and I didn't have an umbrella, and now I have a cold. It's like, that's... maybe I'll look that up.
I mean... You know, all these, what we would call old wives' tales, I think they come from a place of truth often.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trying to find a reasoning.
Maybe the science isn't right, but like we've followed the pattern of thinking and usually this leads
like,
to this.
It's not like cause and effect. It's like this happened and then that leads to this, which leads to that, which leads to that, which leads to that, and now you're sick.
Yeah.
It's like the old farmer's almanac, right?
I don't think that makes any sense.
That doesn't make any sense at all. So, Mo, I mean, we got Taya. You have a hard out at 1:30. It's 1:25.
I have a hard out in 5 minutes.
I mean, there's one question that we ask most of our guests, and I'm really curious to know what your answer would be. It's a two-parter. The first one is, what would you say rheumatoid arthritis, what would you say is the biggest thing that this experience has taken away from your life?
Thank you for asking that question. I think that, you know, in a weird way, I'm very thankful for this disease because, now that I am on a path to learning how to manage it and learning what I need to do to feel well, that I think has contributed positively to my overall wellness. So I think I'm more well now as a person who has a chronic illness than maybe at other times in my life, because I'm more thoughtful about how I exercise and what I eat and how I manage my stress. Stress is has a huge impact on rheumatoid arthritis because stress feeds inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm so much more aware of my stress and how I manage stress in my life and preventatively how I manage it. And I think also I'm thankful for my wellness in a way that I wasn't before. I just took it for granted,
mm-hmm.
right? Unless you get sick, you take wellness for granted. And you don't think about how not being well changes your approach to all the roles that you have in your life. Like, I love what I do. I love my job. Mm. I love being a teacher. And being sick prevented me from doing that the best I could. And I love being a mom, and being sick prevented me from being the best mom I could be. Even in my relationship with my husband, like, when you're tired and achy and sore, you don't feel that cozy and romantic.
Mm-hmm.
It impacts your romantic relationships, right? And you know, it impacts all of my relationships in my family. I don't always have the energy to do things for my mom and dad or to do help my brother out and things, you know. So it impacts all these parts of your life, which makes you so aware of how lucky you are to be well when you're well.
Mm.
So in a weird way, it's made me really thankful.
What would you say is the biggest thing that it's given you?
I mean, I am in the last 2 years since my diagnosis and since I've sort of, you know, I'm going through the process of learning to manage it, I have stopped taking time for granted. And by that I mean, and this could be a combination of factors. It could be rheumatoid arthritis plus my age plus, you know, things that are going on in my profession, but my disease has definitely played into me being aware that, you know, I got to take risks and I got to take chances and do the things I want to do now while I'm well, while I'm
here. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? While I'm aware and feeling well enough to do it. So I'm thankful for that awareness. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I, you know, the episode wasn't as good as we thought it was going to be.
it's a real stinker.
We'll probably, we won't put it up, but this was fun.
It was a good time.
We can try again like next week or something. Yeah, maybe feeling better.
How about I call you when I'm in a flare up?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. No, this was exactly what I expected it to be.
Awesome.
And, I want to say, first of all, thank you for coming in and sharing your experience, because, you know, every time we have somebody into the studio and sharing their experience of the hardships they've gone through, it's always something that undoubtedly is going to help somebody else. There's something to glean from all of these conversations. And so, you know, kudos to you for agreeing to come in and share this. But I personally and selfishly, more importantly, I want to just thank you for being who you are. Because I think anyone who really like listened to this episode will also hear how awesome of a human you are. And you honestly, I don't know if this fucking podcast would exist if it wasn't for you.
I do remember. Do you remember we sat down and had a beer and you were like, I have this crazy idea for a podcast.
Yeah.
Do you remember that day?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. And we were there far too long. Like, there was a long, long lunch. But I mean it. I want to thank you for just having such an effect on my life, and because that effect has gone out to affect other people, and you just continue to do that in your own way. And it's, when I said I love you,
teary.
What I really meant was I love you.
I love you too.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of the work you're doing.
And we just like to apologize to all the listeners. you know, this podcast probably would have just been Taylor and I had it not been. Yeah. So, like, sorry that Jeremy is here doing this, but there's nowhere to really go from here.
Yeah, I don't know.
Only down. It's down this Prosecco.
Woohoo!
Thanks, Mo.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back next week with another fascinating conversation. Probably not as good as this one, but who knows? The bar is set. Maybe we can reach it.
Yeah.
In the meantime, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I guess is what we're supposed to say, and hit the subscribe button, rate the podcast, review the podcast. We love going and reading those. They're always really fun. And it also just helps us stay on the iTunes charts or the Apple Podcast charts, which is good for us because it means more people can hear these stories and hear what people have to share, and it can really transform some lives.
And if you want to support the podcast financially, you can go to Sick Boy Podcast.
Nope. Well, you could go to sickboypodcast.com and just, you could find the Patreon button.
Yeah, you could
which
probably
will take you to.
You could probably navigate your way around to find your way to patreon.com/sickboy and support us there. If we're going to be hitting up some new cities in 2019, and all your generous contributions go towards getting us to some new places.
Yeah,
to
Boise,
talk to
Idaho.
Some.
We're coming to you. We're going to go
Boise.
We're going to go to Fargo,
North Dakota.
Yeah,
I think Fargo's in North Dakota.
Yeah, we're going. We're also going to be hitting up
the Philippines. That was cool that they booked us there.
Yeah, Manila. Manila. Here we come.
That actually may happen.
Oh.
They screened the Sick Boy doc out there, and it was a huge hit.
I think that was in Taiwan.
No, no, no.
And I'm going to Taiwan.
Taiwan in the Philippines?
No, Taiwan is a disputed Taiwan is a disputed territory between Taiwan and China.
I don't know about that.
And it's an island.
Thanks so much to Donovan for the amazing sound design. I don't want to make Donovan do any extra work here.
He really enjoys it.
Yeah, I didn't want to make him do any extra work, but it is cool that it sounds like we're in the bottom of the ocean, in the great abyss.
That doesn't help.
Why is there a door opening?
Yeah. I know why. Because we're on stage at the Phantom of the Opera.
We haven't done this in a while, but I wanted to give a shout out to some of the people who have written reviews on the podcast. This one comes from the Gutless Wonder, who just did a recent review back in November of 2018. The guests are great, but the hosts are just awful. Constantly interrupting guests with jokes that aren't even funny and going on weird tangents about their own lives. I really want to hear about these people's stories, but the hosts make it impossible to get through even a few minutes of the show. If you want an insightful show about someone's struggle with an illness, go elsewhere.
Do they give an example of where they can go? Because that would be even better.
If you want to listen to a bunch of dudes make bad jokes and steamroll guests, then this show is for you. 1 star.
Thank you for that. Yes, thank you for that review.
That is brilliant. We should read that review every episode.
And thanks to Take Part for the theme music. They're also known as Florida Man now. You can go to floridaman.bandcamp.com because the link we gave you last week was not real.
It was not real. Yeah, right.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Aaron.
And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.